Hello and welcome to the Lovosho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Thanks for tuning in and being here. Today our guest is Bhagavati and we are going to talk about Osho in the media and Bhagavati's role in dealing with media and PR for Osho. Bhagavati is a writer and a regular contributor to Osho News. Bhagavati, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello Swaram, lovely to be on this show. Thank you for inviting me.
To start, tell us a bit about your background before meeting Osho.
How far back do you want to go? To my birth or?
Well, we have a couple of minutes to answer, so.
Okay. I was born and grew up in post-war Vienna. I moved to Germany in 1972. And I found out about Osho in 1976. And I became a sannyasin by mail.
So did you take sannyas in Germany?
Absolutely, yes. I didn't know I was asking for sannyas. I just knew I had to write to Osho, who was then known as Bhagwan, of course. And I got the name back. And I didn't even know what to do with it. So I asked my friend Vitasmi, who I knew from participating in groups she conducted in Bremen, what to do now. And she told me, well, you have to wear orange and I'll bring you a mala from England next time I come. So that was my initiation.
Okay, so essentially you came to know Osho through his sannyasins and I believe through a meditation center, possibly in Germany.
No meditation center. Nobody had heard of Osho in those days. Vitasmi came occasionally together with Surendra to conduct weekend workshops. And I happened to meet her there. This is beyond me how I managed to get into this group, but it was obviously to be.
Okay, well, that's always very interesting to hear how people have come across Osho, and I hear this many times that it's inexplicable, but somehow it happened.
Yes.
So tell us your first meeting with Osho.
Spiritually or in the body?
In the body. So I believe after you took sannyas at some point, you must have gone to Pune, India, and then you saw Osho for the first time. Mm-hmm. Talk us through what happened then.
I left 2 months after I had my mala. I was in India and I walked into the ashram and I thought this is a very small place. I didn't know much about it at all. I signed up for darshan and there I was. My name was being called and the moment I got up to walk towards Osho, my smile wrapped itself around my ears. I was just so madly happy. And I knew him, and I was home, and that was it. No more words.
Okay, that says a lot. So I guess let's move to the main part of the show. Today I'd like to talk with you about media and PR. I understand you have been involved in dealing with media since the time of Pune One, and then during the challenging years in Oregon. And even today, Osho is represented in a very trivial way. Media are only interested in sensational news and scandals. So knowing Osho from the inside and seeing how he was and still is today portrayed by the media must have been very painful for you, someone who loves Osho. How was for you emotionally and on a personal level to deal with so much misunderstanding?
It's not painful to me. I'm just wondering why people cannot see who he is. And I do realize that for every person, there is a moment when they can see or understand, or I would like to say understand, that there is a master and you can connect to this master no matter if he's in the body or not in the body. To me, Osho is here all the time as he had promised before he left his body. So all the onslaught by the media throughout Pune One, Rajneeshpuram, even Pune Two, and even today, although it has simmered down a bit, it was always about sex. Sex was the issue that the media was clinging on to as if it was something new, impossible, never heard of. And sex made us. Sex has been part of human existence since Adam and Eve. We know that. So I never understood why this was such a big part in people. Have they not made love? Have they not fallen in love? I never understood it, but it goes way back when Osho gave discourses that were then published as a book in Sex and Superconsciousness. And he is not talking about sex per se in those books. He's talking about higher consciousness, how you can use sexuality and sex to transform. And this could never be understood by the masses. Because people are sexually so repressed, all they could see was sex and that they didn't have access to what he was maybe talking about.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And our first episode of this podcast was with Radha, and I brought this up and we spoke about this issue. And she also acknowledged that unfortunately not much has changed since the 60s and 70s to today, because even though perhaps sex is not taboo to talk about, but somehow society is not free of sex. Perhaps sex is more available, you can talk about it, but society is not healthy when it comes to sex and accepting sex. That's probably why the media is still picking on that element of Osho.
That's nicely put. They have no idea what sexuality actually is. Most people don't. Even though we have become more free, but this is nothing compared to the times of our liberation in the 60s and 70s when there was a sexual revolution. And in the 70s, there was the film made, Ashram in Pune, where there were naked people shown, and it created a scandal. It was unbelievable, as if people had never seen a naked person before. And now still in Wild Wild Country, for example, this the stills of those movies are prominently displayed as if this were all we did all day.
Yeah, that's true. That sex element in Wild Wild Country is played very heavily.
Yeah, but all the people who say that, they're just jealous because they had a good time after all.
I'm sure you did, guys. And in fact, that's why you all look so splendor and so smiley in your, you know, 70s and 80s, and you're so relaxed, and perhaps the fact that you enjoyed sex must have played a part on it, I believe.
I'm sure that it's part of it. To have a healthy sex life makes you feel happy and fulfilled. And at some point, this leaves you again. You don't need to have sex until your 90s. And the joy you have just rises higher. And it is transformed into higher consciousness eventually. It's very simple, and Osho has spoken about that so many times, and at least sannyasins have listened, and other people could have the benefit of it, but they choose not to listen to it. If I remember in Wild Wild Country, the people of Antelope who were interviewed today, they all spoke about our sex life. They were all peeping Toms, and they were all jealous. It was very funny.
Yeah, that's true. I've noticed that. I actually didn't expect to talk about sex with you, so let's step back a little bit and go back to media and PR. How did you end up doing media for Osho in Pune 1 and then again in Oregon and back in Pune 2?
I was sent to work in the press office when I went back to stay forever in Pune, which was in 77. And I had other jobs before. I worked in the kitchen first and then in the health center, which I enjoyed very much. And then I ended up in the press office and I enjoyed that work very, very much. Looking back, I can see how much I learned and which I was able to use over the years again and again and again, because we had sometimes direct guidance from Osho about what would be published or... We were encouraged to write letters to the editor. We were very busy in making ourselves heard in India, especially.
So I'm very curious to hear what was the directions from Osho.
They were indirect. Krishna Prem would usually, he was the boss of the press office. He would get information, and Subhuti was the main newsletter, news writer. So we would write press releases, and Osho would have spoken on a particular subject And somehow the messages were exchanged that we would write a news release on that. And usually the Indian media always printed our news releases. They loved hearing what was going on at the same time condemning us.
So essentially Osho was not telling you what to write. It was more like a...
No, it was an indirect transmission, I would call it like that. Many things happened on a non-verbal level.
Okay, got it. So when it comes to media, so we already mentioned that most of the media coverage was against Osho. Was there any case of good media report? I think, for example, of a case of Enzo Biagi, who was a very famous and respected Italian journalist who went to meet Osho, I think, during the world tour, I believe when Osho was in Nepal. And Enzo Biagi was very impressed with Osho, but unfortunately his report was censored back in Italy, even though he was already established and a very prominent journalist. Do you recall this episode, or can you remember any other favorable media report on Osho?
The most favorable media report during the 70s was by Bernard Levin, a British journalist for the Times of India, the Times in England. And he wrote a three-part series, which was absolutely positive. Bernard Levin absolutely got it. And he was ridiculed, Bernard Levin was, and he even wrote another article afterwards about Osho, and again, very, very positive. Though that is an outstanding contribution by a journalist who was not afraid to say what he really saw and what he felt, and he truly wrote about it. And the Times did not edit it much, as far as I know. I mean, I wasn't in England at the time, but we loved those articles, and I'm still trying to get a hold of them to put them on Osho News. That was in the 70s. There were interesting articles, but always with a slant. It wasn't always totally negative, but there was always a slant about Osho that he was a hypnotist. So we would talk to the press and we said, well, can you imagine there are 3,000, 4,000 people sitting in here? How does one person hypnotize 4,000 people in one session? Of course, they couldn't answer. Again, next time they still spoke about him as being a hypnotist. They could not believe that Western people in particular would flock to an Indian guru. That was out of their experience, and it was frightening to them. The children, so-called children, we were all grown-ups. There were not that many young people there, very young people. We were painted as we left our parents, we left our jobs to seek fulfillment with the Indian sex guru. That was the main headlines every time and again. The story you tell me about Enzo Biagi is interesting because he actually wanted to go to Kulu Manali already because Sarjano had invited him to come and he wanted to come and they would not give him a visa. Enzo Biagi was not allowed to come to India to film Osho. So when Osho went to Nepal, they applied for visas to Nepal and there Enzo Biagi managed to interview Osho and the whole transcripts of everything Osho told Enzo Biagi is published in the book Sarjano wrote, When a Real Lion Meets a Real Master. Otherwise, it has not been published. And Enzo Biagi was, of course, censored because Italy is a Catholic country. And they were against Osho from the beginning, too. The Vatican was against him. The Pope was against him.
Yes. The difference between Italy and England, where the Times perhaps didn't approve it, but they published those articles from the journalists, whereas in Italy, Enzo Biagi actually was not even a juvenile journalist.
He was a senior journalist, a very interesting man.
Wow, that's very interesting. And thanks for pointing out that the transcript is available on the book of Sarjano. And I hope to get Sarjano on the show at some point in the future.
Oh, yes, do that. He has also lots to say. You know, Sarjano must have asked the most question of any of us, besides Manisha, who was asking many questions to Osho, also of people who had submitted them. But Sarjano, as an individual commune member, he asked Osho so many questions, and Osho has spoken so much about him, which is also all in the book. It was an incredible master-disciple relationship between the two of them.
Excellent. I look forward to speaking with him. So, Bhagavati, have you ever spoken to Ocean on a personal level about this bad media coverage? I'm thinking of Osho as a human being. Has he ever expressed his emotions or thoughts about the negative media coverage?
He has spoken about the media, oh yes. He has also spoken about individual journalists who sent him questions. He answered their questions in discourse. He was very much involved in the media because he knew his name and his teaching needed to go out worldwide and the media would be a help. And it didn't matter if it was negative or not. It really didn't matter. The main thing was that his name was heard echoing around the globe.
Do you think that the bad media coverage around Osho and his people hurt some sannyasins and made them somehow less vocal and open about Osho? Where I'm coming from is that I have the feeling that sometimes some sannyasins tend to avoid mentioning their past connection with Osho, whereas for me that's never been an issue, and possibly because I wasn't there in the center of the cyclone. What is your opinion on this?
If people choose not to stand up to the fact that there are sannyasins of Osho, then they have to look at their motivations and they have to look, are they really sannyasins? Have they ever surrendered to Osho? What is it about Osho that makes them use their sannyas name and say they are sannyasin at the same time they don't support him in the public eye? It's something everybody has to look at and answer for themselves.
And do you think there is an element of truth in that? Have you seen this happening, or is it just a kind of a personal perception?
Well, Osho is an avalanche. And if you can't let go within that avalanche, you will never be total. So if people choose not to be total, although this was all about the teachings that we become total and aware and being in the here and now at all given times. If people can't do that, it's their choice. I have nothing more to say about that.
Okay, fair enough. Next question is still staying in the media topic. You have known Osho from the inside and from the loving space of a disciple. On the contrary, the general public look at Osho as a glamorous superstar guru with a Rolls Royce sitting on the podium, all dressed up with a fancy cloth and rich and powerful. How was for you to reconcile this stark contrast between Osho the public figure and Osho as your master, and also as a human being, a very delicate and sensitive man whose health was very fragile?
There's nothing to reconcile, nothing at all. He was all and everything. He was a great showman in many ways. When I remember when he spoke to the press in Rajneeshpuram and he made jokes with television presenters, he was so hilarious. We laughed so much. At the same time, he would bring the truth in again and again and again. He used anything, any response from somebody to tell them the truth, and he could be hilarious at the same time, and he could be very serious too. He had the whole range of how to respond to a certain person.
So basically, what you're saying is Osho was both sides at the same time, and there is no contradiction in that.
Absolutely not. And again, remember that everybody who looks at Osho projects. Even we as sannyasins, we all have a certain projection, especially about his outer appearance. But we know what we have seen inside. There is no body. There is no image. It is an energy. And this is what ultimately is the connection to the master.
Speaking with people who have met Osho, many, many of them say that when they were in the presence of Osho, there was emptiness.
Yes, there was emptiness. Looking into his eyes, there was huge emptiness, but full emptiness.
Okay, well, thank you so much for that. It's very beautiful. Now, let's leave media and PR and let's change topic and move on. I know you live in Bali, and I've heard a lot about Bali, and I'm not sure what to make of it. I hear that many meditation festivals and events happen there, but also that it's a very Muslim country, which is quite strict and I hear that there are wonderful beaches, but it's also very polluted. I hear it's a sort of mystical place, but also has become very commercial. So what's your view?
First of all, Bali is part of Indonesia. It is one island among more than 17,000 of the archipelago. And Bali is predominantly Hindu in a Muslim country. The Hinduism in Bali started around the 600 AD when priests from India came over to Java and Bali. And the Balinese were animists at that time. And they took very much to Hinduism and developed a Hinduism which is now called Bali Hinduism, which has its root in Indian Hinduism, but it developed on an island and it has not developed in the same way as in India, which has become kind of more loud with many, many gods, with kind of kitschy colors at times, whereas the Balinese are more plain and they don't have god images in their temples. The temples are important for their worship, but they only have small places in the temples which are available for the spirits or the divine to come into should they decide to visit. So they don't have a real god worship. Although the island is full of wood carvings and stone carvings of Ganeshas and of Buddhas, because that's all made for export. But the Balinese also like either Ganesha or something like that. They're open to change. And the Balinese have always embraced other religions. They have no problem with Christians, Buddhists, Muslims. They have lived together for centuries.
Wow, that's very interesting. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
Are there many sannyasins in Bali?
No, there are not, and there is no Bali Osho Center. We had a small center for a while, but the person who established it left Bali again and sold the place. Bali has never taken off as a center for sannyasins, and the sannyasins that live here is about 30, more or less, on my count. And we all live quite far away from each other, except the compound I live in, where several sannyasins living in individual houses. That's the only sort of communal sannyasin situation that we have on the island.
And do you think it's just, accidental that there is no Osho place there, or is there any particular reason?
It never happened. There have been many sannyasins visiting and many people said, oh, it would be nice to have a center. It just never happened. There is a Russian sannyasin called Maitreya. He lives in the hills about an hour from where I live in a place called Ubud, which is a very artistic town. And he has been building on a center since about 2 or 3 years now, but it still hasn't happened. I don't know what it is. I have no idea. But we are connected in a way, and we like to see each other now and then, but we have never any large meetings or parties, nothing like that.
Let's hope that Maitreya will materialize the center and the community will flourish in Bali, and especially because now we are in Singapore, so we can go and enjoy and fun. We really need that.
We will see. If Bali needs an Osho center, it surely will happen.
So, Bhagawati, what brought you to Bali and how long have you been living there and what are the changes that you've seen in Bali over the years?
I came for a visit the first time in 86 together with Anato, my beloved, who is also Italian, by the way.
So you're used to the Italian accent.
I am. And we came for a holiday on the way to Australia in 86. And a friend of mine had set up a little clothing business here. And we enjoyed very much being on Bali. I loved the place. I fell in love immediately with it. But then we went on to Australia and thought of immigrating to Australia because we were looking for a new place. Osho was not available at that time, not easily available. He had not yet... He was still in Uruguay at the time. And put it in a nutshell, eventually we came back to work in the company of my friend who was making garments, that was Jayapal, because we needed to earn some money and make a living. But then we went back to India again because we wanted to be with Osho. And I'm very happy that I did that because we were there for 3 years or almost 4 years in Pune too. And it was a very, very important time to have been there as well. And then after Osho died, we stayed another year in Pune. And again, we needed to leave. There was now a time of change. So we left and we thought, well, where have we been happy before? We didn't know where to go. And we decided we'll go back to Bali. It was so accommodating to us and we loved it there. So we came with two suitcases and never left.
Okay, Bhagwati, let's move on. I cannot finish this interview without mentioning Osho News. In a future episode, I will be interviewing Punya, the founder of Osho News, and we will deep dive into the story of how Osho News came about. So I'll leave that story to Punya. But since I've got you here, can you tell us what is Osho News and what's your involvement with it?
Osho News is an independent website. We publish news about Osho and his people. We publish current news. We do research into what Osho said about happenings that are current. And you would be surprised to see how many things he has spoken about 30 years ago that now come to pass. So this is very enjoyable research. And we have contributors. And we publish all kinds of articles, essays, book reviews, anything we feel is interesting to the sannyasin community at large and people who are interested in Osho, the friends of Osho worldwide, of whom there are really many. And I'm a contributor. I work with Punya and have a ball.
When you say contributor, you mean that you are in charge of writing articles, so what's your role?
Well, yeah, I write articles on certain topics. I work with some contributors on their articles and post them. I look for interesting happenings in the media worldwide, things that are interesting, as I mentioned, and we select Osho discourses that we feel are pertinent to current events.
Oh, that's a lot of work.
Yes, I'm busy.
I'm sure of that. Because Osho wrote over 700 books and there are like, I don't know how many thousands of hours of discourses recorded. So to go and find what you need, it's not an easy task.
It's a joy.
What are your current projects and plan for the future, if you have any?
No. My current projects are every day. Whatever comes through my desk, I deal with it, I see things. My good project is my garden. After monsoon, it needs a lot of attention. It's a jungle, and I like to keep it that way, but it still needs some loving care. And basically, I live, Swaram. I'm alive. Life is amazing. We're living in such incredible times. We wouldn't have imagined that in the 70s, that the world would come to such a point as it is now, and we still don't know where it's going.
Well, I can definitely feel your energy and aliveness, and that's so beautiful. There is some kind of vibrancy in your voice and the way you speak, and so inspiring for me, because I see myself when I am, you know, a little bit older, but I still want to have fun and being alive and not just being there complaining in the morning like many.
Oh yes, dreadful. I mean, how can people wake up in the morning and go into a slump already? I really don't understand that, but I've never done that. I have been a person who just loves life.
Wow, that's so beautiful. And perhaps that's one of the bonuses that you get from living your life with Osho.
Absolutely. He has been the most precious gift in this life and maybe also in other incarnations, but we don't need to go there. I know he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, those are a little bit more esoteric topics which are out of the scope of this podcast.
Yes, we can do another time. We can talk about his Tibetan past life or something like that. That's great stuff. I mean, it's amazing. It does, but it all doesn't matter. We have been incarnated so many times and we have been on Earth also many, many times, many lives. And all that has brought us to the moment right now. And there can only be joy that we have had such rich experiences, any kind of experiences, but they were rich.
Where people can find you if they want to discuss more of these esoteric topics and they want to get in touch with you and they want to know more about you? Do you have a website, Facebook page or anything like that?
None of it, no. They can reach me at my email.
Okay. Would you like to share that email? I can put it in the show notes, or you prefer to remain kind of private?
It's okay.
I will link your email address in the show notes.
Okay, I'll send it to you. Yeah, sure.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. So we're heading towards the end of the show, and I've got three final questions for you.
Go for it.
Get ready. So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours?
Okay. I usually wake up around 6 with the sunrise. And I get up and potter around the house a bit, have a look in the garden, enjoy the silence, because it's very silent here at 6 in the morning. And then I make breakfast and have a wonderful cup of coffee. That's my treat in the morning. And I meditate a bit. I sit in silence. And later I listen to some discourse together with Anato. And then I get onto the computer and have a look what the world is telling me, what's happening. It's always the same, basically, but I'm still curious. The mind is curious. And then I pop into the garden and do some gardening for an hour, up to 2 hours. And that brings me to 10 o'clock or so.
So we have covered 4 hours.
Yeah, that's 4. Well, I can't make it. That's about it. That's about 4 hours, yes. That's about my morning.
Very healthy way of starting your day. Okay, second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Just sitting silently. As a meditation that Osho devised, I used to love the Kundalini and the Nataraj and the Natabrahma. Those were my favorite meditations, but nowadays I just like to sit in silence or listen to a discourse.
Osho discourse, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Of course.
Yeah, you know, I do look. People send me links of this teacher or this guru and that, and I do look at everything. Yet, whoever I have listened to, nobody has, for me, the depth and the clarity that Osho has. So I don't spend much time with that.
Yeah, fair enough. Same here, by the way. Okay, so last question is, you live the Osho experiment. You are one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
The same joy as ever, the same importance to my life as ever. He is just it. He is my mentor, he is my teacher, he is my friend. I am forever grateful that I could hear the call to come to him.
Okay, that was amazing, and that's the end of the show. Thank you so much for talking to me and sharing all your beautiful stories and insights and very intelligent way of articulating your experience with Osho. And you shared so much value and giving, you know, lots of interesting information. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me again. And all we can do as the so-called older sannyasins is to just share everything that we have learned, to share everything from our lives and just give it to anybody who can receive it.
And all we can do, new generations, is to be open and receive, because you have so much to share. And
we do, yes. And I don't think we, as the older sannyasins, are already the new man that Osho envisioned, but we are the seeds for it.
To me, you look a little more than a seed, perhaps already a small tree, maybe a bonsai, I don't know, but you're already flowering.
Thank you. We'll do our best.
Thank you, Bhagavad. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome, Swaram.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed the show, help us to reach out to more people by rating this podcast and leaving a review on iTunes. We would really appreciate that, and it would help us spread the word even further. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on the next show.